Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
I kind of figured you guys would be back here for this second part of the interview with George Lois here at The Advertising Show. And glad you are, too, and hopefully we have even a bigger audience for this this segment of our George Lois interview on The Advertising Show, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production. What can you say about George Lois? Well, let's talk about some of the things that he says about the Mad Men television show. A lot of people love that show, and really, it is entertaining. He says here, Mad Men is nothing more than a soap opera set in a glamorous office where stylish fools hump their appreciative coiffed secretaries, suck up martinis, and smoke themselves to death as they produce dumb, lifeless advertising. Oblivious to the inspiring civil rights movement, the women's lib movement, the evil Vietnam War, and other seismic events of the turbulent roller coaster 1960s that altered life forever. Basically, the heroic movers and shakers of the creative revolution bear no resemblance to the cast of characters on Mad Men. There's more of the article as well as you can find out on in the Playboy issue, and I don't know what issue it is, but shouldn't be hard to find. Basically, huh? So that's George.
October.
Okay. So that was that's George Lois, and that's who's on the show today. Basically, and we're so happy to have him back. He's such a gracious man. You know, somebody who's done so many things in their life. And the thing I like about George is he absolutely loves what he does. He is, 72 now, I think, or something like that?
We'll have to ask. I think he's in his mid-70s at this point.
Well, the people like that don't retire. They work, and they love it, and they do it every day. And wouldn't you like to have a job like George? Well, all you have to do is love what you do. So Brad, what's going on your end there?
Well, and I agree, Ray. George is not just an ad guy. He did a lot of work for social causes. He did the campaign for Bobby Kennedy Jr. For him running for president. He's done a lot of things just than create ads for well-known products. Let me get this out of the way real quickly. What do all of our listeners have in common, Ray? They're probably listening to today's show through an iPod or an MP3 player.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a reminder, Audible is offering a free audiobook download along with a free 14-day trial to give all of our listeners a chance to check out their service. Audible.com, as you've been hearing us speak for the past several weeks, is a wonderful source to go for business titles and listen to books online, New York Times bestsellers, arts and entertainment, fiction. It's all there. To get your free audiobook download and begin your free 14-day trial, simply go to audiblepodcast.com/adshow. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/adshow and sign up today. And while you're at it, tell a friend about the 14-day free trial offer.
And for those of you listening on the Sony Walkman cassette, how are you doing that? Because we haven't been able to figure that out yet, okay? So congratulations if you are indeed. That means you must have taped the show somehow. Which is okay with us. That's fine. Share it with a friend. There's nothing about that. Hey, by the way, I forgot to mention, too, Jeremy Kent is with us here, our European correspondent. He is so punctual, and he puts together these reports every week for us here at the Advertising Show. There's a bar in, talking about a chocolate bar, in Europe, in Britain, called the Milky Bar. And the driver there was the Milky Bar Kid.
Yeah.
Well, the Milky Bar Kid is all grown up now. He's the Milky Bar old fart. No, but apparently he's going to talk about that. Also, Samsung is trying to do something, and I'm not sure why, a TV newspaper. Okie doke. You cannot put your TV in the birdcage bottom. It doesn't work that way.
On the other hand, you won't get ink on your hands.
That's true. That's true. That reminds me of working in radio back in the early 70s with a teletype. Every time you change that damn reel of teletype, you had blue hands. It was.
And our listeners are probably wondering, what in the world is he talking about? Folks, that's back when you actually would rip and read copy, yep. News copy.
It would go tackety, from, tackety, tackety, tackety. Yeah. Just watch WKRP, you'll get
AP
the gist.
Or UPI, I guess, right, Ray?
Yeah, UPI, that's right. I forgot about that. I was going to say UPS, but that's not right. This is interesting. You know, times change, things change. And this is from TV News Check. It's an article written about shrinking TV spots. A word from our sponsors, it says a very brief word, TV commercials shrinking, along with attention spans and advertising budgets. Well, my suggestion there is, the advertising budgets aren't shrinking. You're just you're paying 80% of what you would normally pay for a full-length commercial for a shorter one. But what the heck. The 15-second ad
I'm sorry, I missed that. Would you repeat that? I wasn't listening.
I'm sure you weren't. And the 15-second ad is increasingly common, gradually supplanting the 30-second spot. And so it's interesting, too. We'll finally get a take on this from George as well, because, you know, is it really the fact that we have lost the ability to pay attention? Because I can't imagine that ADHD is something that is a product of this generation, Gen X, Gen Y, millennials, whoever the heck's out there. My suggestion would be that it's more about what we're putting in the commercials that's causing people to say, I don't want to listen to
that. Not interested.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. 15-second ads cost about the same per second as longer ones. Well, how dumb is that? But, of course, cost half as much. A 15-second ad on network cost TV cost about $20,000, according to Nielsen. So,
and it's not always half either.
No. Well, it used to be way back when before.
Yeah.
Before some companies thought that it would be good to charge more. But I find that very interesting. So my suggestion is, this is silly. Shrinking spots because people aren't paying attention. Why don't you just create a good commercial? I don't know.
Yeah.
And the other thing here is MySpace is redesigning. They want to get a Generation Y now. And so basically MySpace is saying, okay, give us another try. We're going to see what we can do. And my comment to that is, I think it's a little bit too late for
that.
Yeah, doors closed, the cows are out, all that kind of stuff. And they're also selling new wine in millennial bottles.
Bottles?
No, it's a Stuart. This is a New York Times Stuart Elliott article, and it says there's a moment in a classic Warner Brothers cartoon where Bugs Bunny asks, "What's all the hubbub, bub?" And now along comes a campaign that might encourage the Waskily Wabbit, he says, to inquire, "What's all the hobnob, Bob?" The campaign underway for a line of wines named Hobnob. The campaign, with a thrifty budget of $200,000, which is thrifty, carries the theme at the center of it all. And what they're looking to do is grab people away from the bottled beverages that you would normally see millennials drinking.
Why do I smell a lawsuit coming from Disney?
I don't know. So that's what. Go ahead.
Before you bring Jeremy, I got to put this into today's show from the category of I can't believe he said that. Mm-hmm. Google CEO Eric Schmidt, appearing on CNN, according to CNN, says that people. This is Eric saying this. Mm-hmm. People who don't like Google Street View cars taking pictures of their homes and businesses can just move.
Okay.
The gaffe comes as Google admits to mistakenly collecting private data. So, you know, Eric, you know, don't get pissed. Don't say what you really feel. You know, you need to edit yourself here, especially if you're on CNN, a worldwide television cable network.
Right, right.
Gee.
Speaking of CNN, I really enjoyed watching the miners come out of the space that they were in.
Chile. In Chile, I was surprised. I mean, these poor guys, they go from, you know, being sensitively inhibited and having, you know, wearing those sunglasses. First of all, I'm wondering how many Chileans are buying those sunglasses now that they all came out. They looked like rock stars because they were in dark for, you know, 2-3 months, whatever it was.
Right.
But more importantly, they went from, you know, totally isolation to rock stars in Chile.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be, well, they're going to have some time, interesting time adjusting to that whole thing, including their eyeglasses with their Oakley, their Oakley sunglasses. And that's not a paid endorsement. So anyway, it's kind of cool. Hey, Jeremy Kent, let's talk about candy, okay? The Milky Bar Kid has grown up. Oh, no. Let's listen.
Hi, and welcome to London for the European News Desk. I'm Jeremy Kent. This week, Nestlé's Milky Bar Kid is all grown up, Samsung is putting the newspapers on TV, and Zenith Optimedia sees 3 years of growth. Milky Bar is a sweet white chocolate bar that has been produced by Nestlé and enjoyed by British children for decades. Since 1961, Nestlé has marketed it with the help of a small blonde boy wearing glasses, a brand hero known as the Milky Bar Kid. Created at the height of the Western film era, the Milky Bar Kid would ride into town, round up the bad guys, and then distribute Milky Bars to one and all to the cry of, "The Milky Bars are on me." Now, Nestlé is unveiling four adult competition winners who will impersonate the Milky Bar Kid in a campaign created by Santo entitled Ungrow Up. Nestlé has chosen a diverse range of adults to play the part of the Milky Bar Kid, including Miss Great Britain contender Stephanie Jones. The $11 million spend will promote the raisin and biscuit-flavoured Milky Bar variant, with most of that spend going on outdoor media, including digital billboards and London Underground video panels. Samsung is already beginning to think beyond its Galaxy Tab, and the company is already in talks with publishers about using their content on its smart TV platform, and the possibility of a TV newspaper is in the air. There is definitely a place for newspaper-like apps on the iPad and the Galaxy Tab, but it may be a stretch to expect a viewer to read news copy on their TV when there are so many 24-hour news channels already available. However, Samsung believe that there will be a rush for that kind of material and claim that they are already in discussions with the Financial Times, News International and Future Publishing. Whether those negotiations go beyond the tablet and onto the TV is another thing. As Samsung launched its smart TVs, the company invited developers to create new applications that can work with touchscreen technology or remotely interact with Samsung's suite of smart products. Finally, despite doommongers insisting on a double-dip recession, the economic recovery appears to be gathering pace. Zenith Optimedia has posted positive forecasts for the UK, with ad spend set to grow 4.8% to nearly $18 billion in 2010. Zenith sees that trend continuing over the next 2 years, with strong growth already returning to TV and outdoor, whilst the internet has continued to boom. However, this year isn't good news for everyone, with newspaper ad spend forecast to fall 2.4% and magazines by 5.9%. The downward trend is expected to continue for newspapers in both 2011 and 2012, but magazines can expect a slight recovery in both years with a modest growth rate of 0.5%. However, most publishers now have online, mobile and iPad editions that are driving strong new revenue streams, so the overall revenue picture doesn't look too bad. This is Jeremy Kent at the European News Desk for The Advertising Show.
Jeremy Kent, as always, thank you much for your contribution here to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth, our European correspondent. George Lois is with us this week, as so was last week here at The Advertising Show. You know, we talked to George a little bit about, I said, do you ever go to Wikipedia and see what people write about you? George, this is what they say. Born in Bronx, New York City, New York, an American art director, designer and author, Lois best known for over 92 covers designed for Esquire. George Lois Esquire covers considered among the most memorable propaganda imagery in any medium and certainly the most provocative in the history of the magazine industry. From 62 to 72, his Esquire covers offered a controversial statement on life in the 1960s with subjects including Norman Mailer, Muhammad Ali, Andy Warhol, Germaine Greer, and Richard Nixon. In 2008, the Museum of Modern Art, MoMA, exhibited 32 of the Esquire covers, and it goes on and on and on. We also want you to know that George spent some time in Korea, fighting the Korean War, so a veteran as well. We thank you for that, George. But as of late, by the way, welcome back to the show. I do need to go on, but go ahead.
It's great. Thanks, guys. I love being with you two guys. Really, you're both such a joy.
Thank you, George.
You really are.
We appreciate that.
In this world of bullshit, you guys are terrific.
Well, yeah, we don't believe in that kind of crap. You know what I'm saying? There's an article, and if you get Playboy, you saw the article and obviously read the article. It's a mad world. The Mad Men misrepresents the advertising industry by ignoring the revolution that changed the world of communications forever. If you were listening last week to the show, you would understand more of what we're talking about. The mortal sin of omission makes Mad Men a lie. Matthew Weiner, creator and showrunner of Mad Men, rejects my opinion of his show. Well, so be it. He's allowed to say whatever the heck he wants, I would imagine. But the article, it's really well written, obviously. Why wouldn't it be? But Brad, you've got some commentary on that as well.
Yeah, it's classic George Lois. Seneca Creative from Twitter wants to know, George, how the real TV show Mad Men is compared to real life in the ad business back when you were doing your job in the late 50s and throughout the 60s. Well, folks.
It was two different, it's beyond two different worlds. I mean, they're from Mars, you know. I mean, that show is about, you know, the biggest bums in the world. They're hacks who have no talent. They don't have any talent at their jobs, but they're fools. They spend their lives trying to stoop their secretaries. You know, they smoke themselves to death. You know, they drink all day long. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, you know, it's not that it's such a look. It's a show, and people can enjoy it if they want. You know, but the point is that when they started the show, they told the world that they were doing a show in the 60s, and everybody who knew anything about the media or advertising in the 60s thought it was going to be literally. Most of the people thought it would be a show about me, for God's sakes, and somehow it would be like a heroic show about the way the creative revolution, which I helped trigger, you know, change the world, and you know, with bright, witty, and you know, incredibly, sharp stuff that literally forced people to not only remember the commercials, but spend their lives talking about them, and along they come with this idiot show, that doesn't mean those kind of agencies didn't exist, but they certainly had nothing to do with the 1960 creative revolution, mm-hmm. And that's what I object to, because they gave people the impression that it was going to be a show about a new counterculture of the 60s, not even near, you know. And that's so that the other article they're talking about, the Playboy article, the Playboy guys asked me if I would. It was an anniversary issue, anniversary of the show, whatever, how many years, and they said, would I like to say something about the show? I said, sure, I would, and I did this bombshell of an article where I just told everybody to off, you know, but I explained exactly what, you know, what I'm trying to tell you now, you know, and of course, everybody is reproducing my last, my next to last sentence where I think there's like 12 curse words in it, you know, which is about my norm, you know, but my very last line is, and besides, you know, after all this ranting against the show, I said, and besides, I was better looking than Don Draper was back then. And by the way, Ray and Brad, I was, okay? I don't care what you two guys think.
Well, I'm not gay, and I would say the same, George.
Okay, if you were gay, you would have loved me.
If Ray was gay, he'd be more popular.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'd also be in trouble.
That's a great answer, and we kind of knew that answer because we've asked you before on other shows. And by the way, our listeners that may be new to the advertising show, we have several shows at theadvertisingshow.com with George. So Google George and listen to him through our website. We've got two questions here from Twitter, which I will combine. Emmy the Beth wants to know where you see advertising going over the next 5 years, and Melissa Ebanks wants to know what are the biggest challenges facing advertising today. Kind of combine those two questions there, George.
Well, I mean, what everybody gets real wrapped up on, you know, in talking about where advertising is and where it's going is the technology, you know, and that's all they talk about. I mean, for instance, there was a you know, one of the big, one of the giant problems in advertising today is maybe there's five super agencies in the world. You know, I mean, basically they do 90% of the advertising in the world. And one of the guy who was the head of the French one, Publicis or whatever it was, a couple of months ago, Fortune or some magazine like that, there was like a 12-page article asking them questions about where the advertising agency, you know, business is going in the next 10 years. The same questions you're asking me, you know. And he goes on and on and on and on and on and on for 12 pages, and it's all about technology, and it's not one word about creativity. Not one single word. It's like having a discussion about talking to the somebody, you know, the president of Ford, the terrific guy they got now, and him talking for 6 days, and he doesn't mention producing better cars. You know, so the real problem is, I mean, you don't sit there and you're worried about the technology. So the point of creativity, you know, is a magical thing if you know how to use it. Creativity can solve almost any problem. You know, it's the rejection of it's the creation of originality, and by rejecting the what you spent, what other people do, it's called creativity, and that's something. And that's the thing. I mean, instead of talking about technology, people should be talking about the creative process and how to create better work. And nobody talks about it. You know, I'm the only person in the world that talks about creativity. It's unbelievable.
Sounds like they've replaced creativity with numbers and ROI and all that kind of other crap, huh?
Absolutely. I mean, they talk about the magazines. Magazines, are in trouble, et cetera. Well, why doesn't somebody try to do a better cover, for God's sake? Why does every magazine cover in the world, in America, certainly, is basically a photograph of some flavor of the month celebrity, you know, and it's a sycophantic cover, and the cover's full of blurbs of idiotic blurbs which they think that will get people to buy the issue because of a specific thing on the issue, and that's what they think a magazine cover should be. Instead of them sitting there saying magazines could die, why don't they create a better product? I mean, if the Esquire magazine of the 60s was hitting the newsstands today, nobody would be saying magazines are dead. They'd be saying it was the golden age of magazine. They would be saying if Esquire was alive today with Harold Hayes editing and me doing the covers, they would be saying Esquire is the golden age of journalism. Instead of talking about the attacks from the because of new technology.
You know, that's such a good point, George. Ray and I can't tell you how often we hear people wanting to talk about how you can digitally connect with today's consumer, but they miss the creative aspects of how to get the attention once you connect with today's consumer. Jason McElweeny, all of these questions this segment will be Twitter, and we'll also do some next segment as well. Jason McElweeny wants to know what your favorite word is, and I think he thinks that it begins with F.
Well, actually, my second most favorite is a combination of two words.
What would those be, George?
Well, one of them is the F word, the other one is the M word, but
Well, we will leave it at that. Ray, do we need a break, or we got time for another question?
No, go. Let's go.
I gotta tell you something. In that art and copy show that we talked about last week, there was a review of that show, and the Times, and somebody was quickly talking about what was on the show, and somebody said, and at the end, the guy said, and the foul-mouthed George Lois, that's me, and the foul-mouthed George Lois was the most interesting, and certainly the most endearing. Right, so I call the guy back. I call the writer up from the Times. I said, "Wait, foul mouth, no doubt about it. Guilty as charged. Most interesting. I should hope so. Endearing. Who the hell are you to call me endearing?" What do you mean by endearing? Is that a code word for something?
Possibly so. You know, Brad, we do have time for another question, so let's do that right now.
Okay, well, very quickly, and we all know the answer to this from previous appearances here on the Advertising Show, but we'll ask it again. Seneca Creative, another question from Seneca, wants to know, how do you rate the success of an ad that you may have created, George?
One, it has to immediately create a buzz in America, you know, in wherever you're running it. It immediately has to be talked about, and it immediately has to be, and you must know exactly, you must feel exactly that it's a famous, that it's going to be famous advertising. And, of course, within weeks, you have to have, a strong increase in sales almost immediately. If you don't get that buzz and you don't get that excitement and you don't get PR off of the commercials that you're running, in other words, it should draw the advertising in and of itself starts the action for the client. But what happens is the PR, you're picked up by the press all over the country, makes you even more famous, and makes the advertising famous and the product famous. But the end result has got to be incredible sales.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth, and our special guest out of New York this weekend, part two of our interview with George Lois. It's a Mad World from George, the original Mad Men. I guess the only Mad Men. We'll be back in just a minute. We'll take a break and come back and talk more with George right here at the Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsyth.
I'd like to buy the world a home and furnish it with love. Grow apple trees and...
It's The Advertising Show, Ray Schillens, Brad Forsyth. George, be careful. The Art of Advertising, what's the big idea? Covering the 60s, celebrity Ali Rapp, the first heavyweight champion of rap. Iconic America. George Lois on his creation of The Big Idea, the Esquire covers at MoMA. Those are the books that have backed and supported and documented a career of what is we're calling the golden age of advertising. And our special guest this weekend here is, of course, George Lois. George, welcome back to the show.
How you doing, Brad? How you doing, Ray?
Good.
Wonderful. Now that you're here, George, had several questions from Twitter on this particular subject, and you know all of the people out there know who they were that submitted this, which I think was an outstanding question, and that is, what advice do you wish someone would have given you back when you first started out in the ad business?
Good question.
Well, you know, I remember... when I came, I was lucky enough that when I was in Pratt, my second year, I ran into this great teacher who threw me out of school and got me a great job, you know, and said the school couldn't teach me anymore. And unfortunately, I got drafted and I went into the Army and I wound up going to Korea. I come back from Korea and I get this sensational job working for Bill Golden at CBS, you know, one of the CBSI, you know, he was one of the great revolutionary designers in America. Anyway, after a couple of years, I told him I was leaving to get a job at an ad agency, and his advice, and he locked me in a room, and his advice to me was, don't do it, George. Don't go out there. The advertising industry is terrible. There wasn't one good agency in the world. George, they're all Philistines out there. And, you know, and that was his advice to me. And you know what? He was right. The only thing is, I was too stupid to listen to him, and I went out and I found out that the world was full of there wasn't a fair ad agency in the world. So I wound up having to sooner or later, create my own ad agencies, you know. But it was to correct that advice, except that if I had listened to him, I wouldn't have had the career I had.
Yeah, and again, CBS Television Network out of New York, and that you started at, and under the watchful eye of a legendary art director. Richard Francis, one of our listeners, wants to know if you missed the good old days of advertising back in the 60s. You worked in the 70s and 80s and on into the 90s, as we've also mentioned even today. Do you miss the days of the early mid-60s?
Oh, yeah, I mean, if you run into guys, you know, who really knew the 60s and worked and knew about what was going on and worked in the 60s and 70s, certainly, you know, when you get together with them, it's a hard lunch to have with guys because they are so unhappy, you know, with all they talk about is the greatness of the 60s and how much fun and how much excitement, how much passion they had when they worked, you know, at my ad agencies, and you know, and the thrill they had with watching great advertising just pour out of the agency. You know, and of course I'm with them, except I don't give up. I'm still doing great advertising, you know. Mm-hmm. I pick and choose what I want to work on, but I can still, I'm still running into, and as we said last week, you know, that Art and Copy show ran, and three different guys who were involved with some terrific new products. One of them is that Super Focus product, you know, Super Focus glasses. Mm-hmm. They called me up in the last couple of months, and I'm now working for all three of them, and there's three sensational, you know, clients and three sensational products. So the point is, you can still do great advertising. There's still some people out there who have the balls and have the passion and who have the brains to go to people like me and to get great advertising done. But alas, you know, the ad agencies are pretty pitiful today. I mean, when young people say they want to go into, what should I do? Should I go into advertising? I can't tell them to go into advertising because there are not many ad agencies that they would want to work for or that would be good for their careers.
Hmm. Well, one of our Facebook friends, George Marcin Strobrawa, wants to know, which member of the Mad Men cast reminds you of yourself? You don't watch Mad Men, so we're going to move on to his second question, which is, of course, if there was anyone in the Mad Men cast reminds you of yourself, it's Don Draper, but you're a better-looking version than him, as you've often said. But his second question is, which textural visual elements in advertising, if any, were ever an issue for you, George?
How I create things, how my creativity, it's always kind of a magical kind of explanation, and I really mean it. I say that if I learn enough about the product I'm working on, and I learn enough about their competition, and I really study it, and I really know what I'm talking about, and I really understand the market, and I really understand the blah, 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 blah. If I really understand everything, the answer, a great idea is floating in the air, right? Is floating by me, and all I got to do is reach up and kind of pluck it and take it. I mean, I really say I don't create ideas. That somehow it's all kind of common sense in my mind, and there is the answer. You know, so I've never had trouble creating a big idea. I've never had it. I don't get into these situations where I spend more than a day trying to come up with a great idea. I mean, I do it pretty quickly. The problem, you know, even back in the great days of the 60s and 70s, in the golden age of advertising, is the problem was making sure that you protect your work. You know, that you make sure that a client's wife or whoever doesn't wind up killing your work. So the important thing is selling it. Even a great idea doesn't necessarily mean that a client can look at it and say, wow, that's it. You know, you have to be able to sell it, and then you have to be able to protect it. And if you can't do that, if you're an advertising person, you're dead.
Before you got out and started your own agency, and while you were still at Doyle Dame Birnbach, what is the most well-known campaign that you worked on? Would that be Volkswagen?
Yeah, that's I came back from Germany in 1959. Bill Birnbach sent me there. He forced me to go there. I went there because I refused to work on a on a German car. You know, it wasn't that long after the Second World War, but, you know, he convinced me when he showed me a headline where in the New York Post, where Germany was selling Israel 20 jets anyway. So I went to Germany. I came back, and I'm walking in a hallway, and Bill Birnbach sees me, and he goes, "You want something, George? I said, Bill, I got it. He said, What? What do you got the advertising? I said, "No, Bill, I don't have the advertising, but I got the marketing problem figured out." And he looks at me, and he says, "The marketing problem?" He said, "What is it?" I said, "Bill, we got to sell a Nazi car in a Jewish town." And then we did. You know.
George, for our students out there that have studied the advertising of Volkswagen and have seen the Think Small campaign, which is the campaign that originally came out of Birnbach, Doldane Birnbach, and was something that really put them on the map. What can you tell us about that campaign? How it was created? Who came up with the ideas?
Well, Julian Kang was a copywriter that came up that did the line, and it was a brilliant line. In fact, he became he and I left Doldane Birnbach in 1960 to start Pappas Kenny Glowis. That was his concept, and that concept basically was the gist of the campaign, in the sense that it was a simple, and of course his body copy also talked about it, the car being a bug and treating it humbly, and that kind of a humble kind of no nonsense approach was basically incredibly thrilling back in the late 50s and the early 60s.
And as a reminder, all of the cars, there were no other small cars at that time. All the other cars were huge by today's standards.
That's true.
Actually, they were. I mean, for instance, I think Renault was in the was trying. Renault was selling cars in the late 50s, and I think probably in 1959 they probably sold two cars. They just couldn't sell the small car. And along comes this Think Small thing that seemed to be edgy and went across against the grain, and it just excited people, And believe it or not, we sold a Nazi car in a Jewish town, and to a lot of Jewish people, I literally was kind of always felt a little guilty about working on books, a lot guilty, And whenever a friend of mine who was Jewish bought it, I'd say, "You son," I'd curse at them.
Well, George, I can't let you get out of here without asking you this question. I do want to make sure and get it in from many of our listeners. They want to know, and again, we had a lot of outpouring of students that wanted to hear from the guy, the legendary George Lois, a guy that's seen it all and done it all. They want to know if you could pinpoint one problem with young creatives today, what would it be?
I think one of the basic problems is that they in talking to and seeing what students do and talking to them, they kind of are ashamed of the idea of selling something. They kind of think it's advertising. I mean, they literally don't think advertising should ask for a sale. And if you're an advertising person, that's deadly. I mean, but I really think there's this kind of a basic thing where they think, advertising, they don't really respect the whole concept of selling, and to me, selling is hot stuff. I mean, the point is, I like selling so much, I have to make sure that what I'm selling is a terrific product, but whether it's MTV that nobody is using, or whether it's Serography, or whether it's Super Focus glasses, it has to be a great product, and to me, that kind of excitement and passion about actually selling products has got to be part of your makeup, and I don't think a lot of the young people think that. I think they think something's wrong with it, but boy, there is nothing wrong with it.
When you're watching television on a network level, or you see a national ad in a publication, do you look at that ad and you find yourself scratching your head, asking yourself, What is the strategy? What is the what are they trying to get across?
TV screen. My my wife's inside and I'm in my and I'm in watching TV. You know, I work and watch TV at the same time, and she hears me yelling and cursing, and she knows it's me cursing at the commercials. Literally, I'm like I rant, you know. I really rant, you know. I mean, God, I sit there and I and then sometimes I say, honey, do me a favor. You know, I'll call them and say, this commercial, come see this commercial. And she watches it with me. I said, can you explain it to me? She said, nope. I'm literally half of them, I don't understand what they're talking about. And you know, and a lot of times, like I was teaching a class, you know, not too long ago at the School of Visual Arts, some kids were saying, well, and they described the commercial. Well, didn't you like the commercial? And they described the commercial, blah, 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 some kind of a beer commercial. And this happened, and that happened. I said, did you see that commercial? I said, yeah, very sweet commercial. I said, well, what's wrong with that? I said, okay, there was like 20 kids in the class. What brand beer were they selling? And the kids had an argument. They were between four beers. They couldn't make up their minds what the brand was. And I said, case closed, shitty advertising.
Yeah.
You know, when I do a commercial and I say, now I see the world, and the guy puts on a pair of glasses in Super Focus, I think you know the name of the brand is Super Focus. You know what I mean?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
There's some wonderful video of you back in the 60s and 70s on YouTube. And all you have to do is just Google George Lois, you find it, when you started your own agency coming out of DDB and wanting to take your agency public and having the idea of doing a holding company and all of that, which was truly innovative for an ad agency to think of doing such a thing. Today, ad agencies are global. They're owned by holding companies. It's very common. But back then, you were going to be, I guess, first at doing that?
Yeah, well, actually, that's basically the reason why I left Pappas & Lois, the agency I co-founded in 1960. I left in 1967 because we went public, and I think it was a kind of a big mistake because a lot of people who I worked with were starting to say, now that we're public, you know, we have to worry about our stockholders, et cetera. We have to do a different kind of advertising. I thought they were all crazy. And so I came up with the plan of something, of calling something AF1, AF Agency of the Future 1. And what I wanted to do was we would remain being an agency, Pappas & Lois, but also create other agencies, wings of our agency. And I would start by starting one called Lois Holland Calloway, and then two or three others of terrific creative people I know, and they voted me down, and I left, and I started my own, my second agency called Lois Holland Calloway. I think if they had listened to me and they had done that, the difference between what I was planning and what the agencies are today is there's five or six agencies and they own 90% of the advertising in the world, but they're not run by creative people. They're run by terrific creative people. They're run by business people. You know, I mean, you can't have a great agency run by business people. The reason Doyle Dane Birnbach was a genius agency was because Bill Birnbach was a genius, and he ran that agency, and nothing happened in that agency where he didn't say yes or no. The financial people didn't run the agency. If something happened and the client was giving you a hard time and was forcing you to do bad work, he threw them out of the agency the way I threw out a lot of clients in my agency because they didn't let me do the kind of work I did. I mean, the point is, it has to be, creative work has to be run by creative people, not by pencil pushers.
You know, George, we are unfortunately out of time here for this week's interview, but I want to say thank you, first of all, for being here with us on the Advertising Show. It's always a pleasure every time, but also kind of reigniting an opportunity for today's creatives and today's agency people to say, you know what, it doesn't have to be just one golden age. We can continue this. We can perpetuate that.
I mean, they can start one tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
Just listen to the way. Just read my books and listen to the way I did it. You know. It's not rocket science. It's called creativity.
Yeah. Yeah. Creativity. That's what it's all about. And George, we thank you again for being here at the Advertising Show.
Okay, guys. I love you both.
Love you too, George. And we will talk with you shortly here.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
So there you have it. Another opportunity to chat with the legendary George Lois. I hope you enjoyed today's interview. And I sincerely, if you can't hear the passion in his voice and the drive and the enjoyment and the love of what he does and why he does it and why he's so doggone successful, you're not listening close enough. You need to take a listen to the whole program again. But we always thank George for coming by. He really is the guy that, you know, he started it. He's connected it to now we have Gen X, Gen Y, millennials, yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. But the big thing that he says is the creativity aspect. Talking with some contemporaries here in the Houston market, and they were saying, well, what do we do now that we have all these new media opportunities? We don't know how to do creative or do stuff for new, the new media stuff. It's like, well, why not?
Yeah,
to me,
nothing
has changed except the way we deliver it or the ability to receive it, I should say. So consequently, nothing really has changed. You know,
other than the fact that people have gotten lazy and they think that because they are in the face of the digital viewer or listener, whatever the case may be, that they can be not as creative because they think they're connecting more closely. But the truth is, as you say, creative is creative. Consumers are consumers. You better figure out how to engage that consumer and forget about focusing in on the medium, if you will.
I've got a client for him, too, as well. The Super Focus is amazing. But a flying car, he could sell a flying car. And there is a flying car coming out. It's not cheap, but it's worth every penny. So maybe I'll mention that to him as well. Anyway, The Advertising Show, Ray Schillings, Brad Forsyth. Next week, it's the author of Fat China, and his name is Paul French. That doesn't go together, but that's okay. So that's next week on The Advertising Show with Ray and Brad, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Did you enjoy today's show? You know, you can go back, you can listen to today's show, you can go back and listen to the week before show or every interview we've done with George and a whole bunch of other great people in the advertising business and listen to that. Share it with a friend, okay? The Advertising Show is a copyrighted Big Radio Midgets production.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.